Take me where the promise is.
Let's have an AA meeting, everybody.
Let's do it.
My name is Cecilia, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Cecilia.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year.
Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our own personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish the relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on aabluechipspeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker. And we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. Tonight's speaker is somebody from the 530 Main Street group in Buford, Derek W. He has taken his time and to come all the way over here, so let's welcome him to NABA.
Hey everybody, I'm Derek and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey Derek.
My sobriety date is July 5th, 2017, and I can tell you that I believe that that is an amazing freaking day in the history of this world. There are those that are around me in my life today that also will agree with that statement. My home group, as Cecilia stated, is 530 at Main Street Group in Buford. We meet at 530 on Main Street. Keep it simple. It's super, super simple and it's awesome. And hopefully I'll tell you, it's a relatively new home group for me, about maybe the last 5-6 months. And hopefully I'll be able to share a little bit more about that home group. It's kind of a cool thing. I have a sponsor, and he has two sponsors. That's an interesting story. Different conversation. I currently do not have any sponsees on the recovery side. I do have a couple of sponsees from the service side. And service has played a large part in my sobriety. So hopefully I will also get into that a little bit as well. What I can also tell you, there we go, there's this card that has all the little cheat sheets I've been looking for. What I can also tell you is that I was born and raised here in Georgia. There's not many of us. And I grew up in Snellville. And my mother and stepfather, my stepfather and my mother actually just celebrated 34 years of marriage. So he's been a long time in my life. My father actually lives in Florida. And he also is married to a lady. She is actually 2 years younger than I am. So, way to go, Dad. They're both on their fourth marriage, and there are professionals in this world who say that maybe I should be affected by that, or that I am affected by that. I don't really know. I don't see that. I also had a younger brother. He was one of us, and he died 5 years ago, December 22nd, 2018. And he died in a treatment center here locally. It's a treatment center that I had actually gone and carried the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to. He'd been there for about 5 months. They said he died sober. I have no reason to check on that fact or anything like that. It certainly made my mom feel a little bit better to know that. So what I can also tell you is that I didn't mourn him when he died. Because I kind of knew this thing was going to happen, and I'd buried him about 20 years ago in my heart and my mind. And that's a different story. So what I can also tell you is that what I have just told you now are facts. Those are truths. Everything else that happens after this is my perception of what happened. Okay? So whether or not it's true or not, I'm not really sure. I certainly think it is because it's my reality. But, you know, that's just the way it is. I have a disease of perception. So, you know, let's hope that it's the truth. Let's hope that it's the facts. Maybe something else will be revealed as well. I have no idea. I can also tell you this is, you know, it's kind of a cool thing doing this on a New Year's Day holiday. That's pretty cool. Also, this group in particular, so where I got sober, there is actually a group called the Blue Chips Group. And when I first heard and saw flyers or whatever about the Blue Chips speaker meeting, I was like going, wait a second, I don't know anything about this meeting that they got over there. What is that? And then I found out that, ooh, it's, you know, it's a speaker meeting over here at NABA. And I'm like, ooh, okay, that's kind of cool. So to be here is really kind of a cool thing for me. I can tell you that you guys are pretty well run. You know, it's been a couple of months now, at least, I think, since I was asked to do this. And, you know, the trusted service that you have do a really good job. They send emails telling you all the details and all that. So it's really a wonderful pleasure to be here. My job today basically is to, you know, say what I was like, what happened, and what I am like now. And so I kind of hope to do that. Before that, I'd like to ask, it's kind of a question, you know, don't, if you don't feel comfortable, please don't do it. But if you have less than 1 year of sobriety, would you please raise your hand? Cool. Welcome. Don't know if you know what speaker tapes are or not, but if you don't, ask a sponsor. But there's a speaker that I just absolutely love. His name is Ralph White. And he has this little saying, all right, and it's pretty cool. And he says, come all the way in and sit all the way down, okay? And what he's saying is get in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. Don't sit on the edge. Don't get to the meeting right before the meeting starts and leave right after the meeting ends, unless, of course, your ride is doing that. You know, get in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what I can tell you is that... before I knew Ralph White, before I knew that little saying, I was actually fortunate enough to actually be so situated that that's exactly what happened to me once I got serious about sobriety. Hopefully I'll be able to tell you a little bit more about that. So yeah, come all the way in and sit all the way down. It's kind of a cool thing. I can also tell you that my new home group, they do this. This is the promises they read, and they read them out of the 4 to the 12 and 12. They say that AA's 12 steps are a group of principles, spiritual in their nature, which, if practiced as a way of life, can expel the obsession to drink and enable the sufferer to become happily and usefully whole. And my experience is that that is exactly what the 12 steps did for me. Okay. Now, what happily and usefully whole looks like on a daily basis can change, but it's definitely a lot better than what it was. Okay, so let's get into the perception of reality. Grew up in Snellville, athletics, academics, they were all very easy for me. I don't recall ever not feeling a part of or not fitting in. So my story, I hear other folks, you know, talk about they had that feeling that they weren't quite, you know, a part of. I don't really remember that. I don't ever remember wanting anything. Again, mother on her fourth marriage currently, so there were, you know, a few stepdads, and there was a single mom, two kids, active kids. How she did that, I have no idea. And what I can also tell you about my mom is that she could not get me sober. She didn't have that power. Absolutely not. And between my brother and I is a really good chance that we also... gave her some sickness as well. But I might not be here today. No, as a matter of fact, I would not be here today if it was not for my mother. She always gave me a place to live if I needed it. She always made sure that I had food. She always made sure that those things were taken care of. So how she did what she did with my brother and I'll never know, but I never felt like that I was less than or anything like that. I can also tell you that I always felt like I could fit in. You know, if I wanted to be with this group, I could do that. If I wanted to hang out with that group, I could do that as well. My very first drink, age 13, some friends of mine had gotten some beer. We had it in a brown bag, and we hid it under the pine straw. Don't know why, that's just what we did, okay? So that tells you that it was hot, number one. All right. Number two, I don't know how many there were, okay? I have no concept of that. I think there was three of us, there might have been four of us. But what I do remember is that we picked it up, and we ran. And we ran to what's called a culvert. And if you're not from these parts, a culvert is basically just a like a tunnel underneath a road, okay? It's usually made out of concrete, water goes through it, okay? Anyway, we hung out by the culvert, and we drank the beer. And what I can tell you is that if I had known how to shotgun a beer, that's what I would have done, but I didn't know how to do that yet. So all I did was just chug it. And I don't remember if I had one, two, three. I truly don't remember, but I know that when I stood up, I fell down. And all I can actually truly remember is that my friends were standing over me, and they were laughing, and I think they were talking about me. And that was good enough for me. Okay? And there was no other incidences regarding that evening. I don't think I got in trouble. I don't think I got sick. I just know that I then spent the rest of my high school years trying to do that as often as I freaking could, period. But again, I was good at athletics. I was good at academics. So these little weekend benders and things like that, I didn't really suffer any consequences. I did earn a DUI at the age of 17. I ended up having four of those lifetime. That was my consequence back in those days. I'm not going to age myself too much, but back in those days, you just paid a fine, is really what you did, and drove around on a piece of paper. I went to college on a golf scholarship. Golf is a sport, folks. And what I learned in college, outside of a little bit of life skills, was I learned how to drink a little bit better. I did join a fraternity, and I did that whole thing, and they taught me a little bit better how to drink. And now, there's a pivotal moment in my life that happened at college. I met a girl, and a lot of stories, books, movies, they talk about the other side of the tracks, okay? You know, in the part of Atlanta where I live, and you guys know about this river too, we got the Chattahoochee River, okay? So in Gwinnett County and northern Fulton County, where the Chattahoochee runs, that is kind of the dividing line. There is a demographic change on the different sides of the Chattahoochee. And she was from the other side of the Chattahoochee. All right, she was from that side that had things that I didn't have, things I didn't even know I didn't have. Anyway, I met her at college, and I thought this was a really good thing. And we ended up one night at some nightclub, some bar in college, had a dance floor, is really what that means. And I'm on that dance floor, and I'm wearing some concert T-shirt, damn Yankees, bad company, and got my mullet haircut going on. And she's breaking up with me. And for the life of me, I can't figure this out. And what she ended up saying to me was, she said, look at me and look at you. We come from two different places. So that's the first time in my life I ever realized that I didn't have things. I felt less than. So what I did was, I ran home. Told mom I needed a haircut and a new set of clothes, and then, you know, spent the rest of that year and the next year, I think, winning that girl back, and there's that. What I can tell you is that relationship ended. There was a set of keys thrown somewhere. There was a ball of beer. There was blood, all that kind of stuff. What I also can tell you is that several years later, she sent an email to my work email. She ended up marrying a friend of mine in the fraternity. She sent an email to my work email asking if we could meet for lunch. And I was like, I don't think that's a real good idea. And then the next thing I know, she's telling me about how some of her behaviors were not what she had hoped that they were when we were together. And I now know what she was doing was making an amends. I don't know what kind of program she's in to this day, but that is what she was doing. When I was at school, I met another girl. Imagine that. And so after that happened, and she was also from that side of the tracks, because see, now what had happened was I had found those things that I didn't have, that's exactly what I wanted. And what I ended up discovering, I know this now, is that what I really, truly chased was money, power, authority. That's what I was always seeking. The bottle just helped me deal with not being able to get it. And what ended up, way that ended up manifesting in my life was that it was never enough. I could have all the material things always, and it was never freaking enough. So I ended up meeting another girl from the right side of the tracks, or the other side of the river, and she had an uncle who was a partner in a very large law firm. And I kind of liked the law, so what I decided was that I was going to go to law school. And there's a little bit of a pattern in my life. I meet the girl, the situation might work out. So I decided I was going to go to law school. And I took the test and I did all the things. And then when I graduated college, undergraduate, there was generally a period of time before you could go to law school. So I had about a year and a half to kill. And her father made me one of those godfather offers. And if those of you who've never seen the movie, it's one of those offers that you can't refuse. Okay, he had just started a healthcare company, and he asked me to run his company. So I was 22 or 23 years old, and I was just named a COO. Think about my ego. And all I found out now that I'm really chasing is money, power, and authority, and I just got named to run a company at 22 or 23 years old. And what I can tell you is I ended up, she and I ended up getting married. That marriage lasted about 2.5 years. She wasn't a bad wife. I was not a good husband. I can honestly tell you that. My behavior was not good at all. But we didn't really get divorced for any incident. We just got divorced because we were going two different directions. I was pretty good at business is what I found out, because even though we got divorced, I still ran this company. And the way that worked was, as long as I made money for the company, it was good. And we were in one of these industries where even a drunk like me running the company couldn't screw it up. Right? I mean, this company was just taking off. We were in a niche in the medical industry. And, and as the company did better, I did better. Okay, and as I did better, I bought more things. And when I bought more things, I still wasn't happy, so I bought more things. And when I didn't still get more happiness, I still bought more things, then I started buying all those other kind of things, okay? All these things that we shouldn't be buying, right? And I can do anything alcoholically, right? I mean, any and everything, you name it, I can do it, and that's what I did. And what ended up happening was that my behaviors got out of hand to where I eventually got fired from that job. Okay, now this is a job I didn't think I could get fired from. So I got to keep up appearances. I got to keep up all the things. So what do? I retire. And the way that looked meant that I went and played golf every morning at the country club. And then when golf was over, I played gin in the men's grill. And then when gin was over, I went out to dinner or some party or whatever. And then I ended up in places I should not be, with people I should not be with. And because I could not face the fact that I did not succeed. Right? And I certainly couldn't let anyone else know that. What ended up happening was 6 years of the roller coaster ride that we're on, 6 years of that. I told people I was retired, but I can guarantee you I actually could not retire, okay? that was not financially suitable or possible. So this is where some of my behaviors got a little out of line, not in alignment with what I believe today. This is where my mother started coming in to help me out. This is where I began, I don't know what the number is, but somewhere between 30 and 40 hospital visits to the ER. Many of them overnight stays when I would go into DTs. I found out that if I called 911 and they sent an ambulance to me, they at least had to take me into the emergency room. I had tried to drive myself a couple of times, and when they found out that I was driving myself to the emergency room, they started talking about how they also knew the police. So that wasn't a very good idea. What I can also tell you is that it says in our book, it says, it's on page, bear with me. It says on the bottom of page 43, it says, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power. I didn't know anything about that. I can guarantee you that. I knew nothing about that. All right? These are not things that I ever even considered in my life. Okay? All I was trying to do was trying to find a way to get more money. Another part in our book where it says on page 25, it says that we have but two alternatives. One is to go into the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best we could, and the other is to accept spiritual help. And again, I just told you I didn't know anything about spirituality. So I'm going to ride this out to the bitter end, and what that looked like for me was 5 arrests in 5 weeks. I'm not good at that bitter end, okay? What that also meant was that I ended up having to do some time. Okay, that also meant that all those things that I was hanging on to that now my mom was actually supporting, I lost. And sobriety or alcoholism ended up taking me to my mother's basement. And that's where I live. Now I'm going to tell you right now, I thought that place was horrible. My mother lives on a golf course, okay? It's not the worst basement in the world. I can absolutely guarantee you that. But it's also where the court told me I needed to go to AA. Now, again, I had gone to a counselor. I had gone to someone who had said, try out AA. And I had tried it out, you guys weren't for me. So now I was ordered. And I was going twice a week with ankle bracelets and all these other kind of things. And I was getting in with the program. I was getting it in. But it was not going to my heart at all. I was just checking off boxes. And what happened was, as soon as I gained enough trust out of my parents, even with no job, no car, no nothing, I found ways to drink. I ended up in the hospital. Okay? Even living in my parents' basement. And that went on again for a few years. Let me tell you about my last drink. What had happened was, I'm a really good probationer. I can check off the boxes. And I had done all the work, and I had actually earned my right to drive again. And it came with a breathalyzer in the car. Don't get me wrong. Right? It came with some consequences. But I had done that. And I had gone out and I had bought myself a used car. Okay, and again, that was a little bit of a change for me. But I had a car. I had a permit. And I had a breathalyzer. And the strangest thing happened to me. I suddenly started going to AA meetings on my own. Now, I don't know if it's because I wanted sobriety or if it's because I was just bored and had no more friends. I don't really know. They were nice people. But I did. I started going to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. And my last drink, I had two choices. So on July the 4th, 2017, I had planned to go to an AA meeting. And then I was doing things I shouldn't be doing. And I'd gotten some message, you know, that said, hey, come meet over here at this other place. I went and met over at the other place. And what I walked into was absolute full-blown alcoholic tornadoes. I mean, some really drunk people. And I probably lasted about 15 minutes saying no. And someone actually said, so what are you, an alcoholic? Well, hold that thought. And so I ended up showing them that I was an alcoholic. And as a person with a breathalyzer in their car, what does that mean? It means that my car can't move now. So now I got to come up with another lie. And what I can tell you is that when I woke up on July the 5th, all I was doing was coming up with lies to explain why I couldn't get back to my job, why I couldn't get back to my mom's house. Okay, what I did not know was that was my last drink. There was nothing special about that last drink. Other than some lying, I didn't get in any trouble or anything like that. I can tell you that over the next couple of weeks, I had opportunities to continue that behavior. For whatever reason, I didn't do it. I don't know why. And so, I'm going back to AA, and this fella who had been my sponsor in name, because, you know, I wasn't calling him, I wasn't working any steps, but he was kind enough to sit there and wait. He was kind enough to sit there and let me do my thing for about 3 years. And we started talking a little bit more, and again, there was a cute girl in the room, okay, I'll be honest with you, that is what happened, and she was working steps. I said, well, I figure if she's going to work some steps, maybe I can work some steps, this might work out. So I asked my sponsor, I said, so let's try to work some steps, what do you think? He says, well, sure, where would you like to start? I'd like to start on step one, that sounds like a good idea. And so we started working steps, and when we got to step two, he very simply asked me to start looking around about things in my life that were working out in my favor, that I had absolutely no part in whatsoever. You know, I didn't pull any strings. And I thought this was craziness. I didn't understand this at all, because again, I didn't come in here with any type of spirituality. And amazingly, I saw things in my life that were working out in my favor that I could not explain. What he had done was he just given me a bit of open-mindedness. That's what he had actually done. And there's a place in the big book where it talks about this. It says, you know, do I now, on page 47, it says, do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? Okay? And what I can tell you that happened next, on that same day, I believe it was the exact same day, and this is where that whole perception and reality and all that stuff comes into play. It was either that day or the next day, I don't remember. But I was having this crisis, okay? And let me tell you what the big book says about these crises. This is great. When we became alcoholics, crushed by a self-imposed crisis we could not postpone or evade, we had to fearlessly face the proposition that God either is everything or else he is nothing. God either is or he isn't. What was our choice to be? Now, I can't tell you that I heard any of that stuff. I just had a crisis, okay? And this is the way that crisis manifested itself. At this point in time, my parents, you know, I've told you that they lived on a golf course. I was working on that golf course in maintenance. Okay, I was cutting grass, doing things like that. I have a history with that, obviously, in the golf industry. And so when you work at maintenance on the golf course, I mean, they give you some really nice equipment, okay? It's not just a normal little yard lawnmower. These are really nice things. And I was just cutting grass. And folks, I was running fantasies in my head that were very elaborate. I mean, like, I was writing down the details so that I could pick up the next day on these fantasies. And they were just crazy fantasies. And most of them centered around what I could get, what I could have, what I could get away with, things like that, you know. And for some reason on this particular day, with this crisis that I had, with these fantasies that I was running and all those other kind of things, I couldn't cut grass. I was going about my day, and all of a sudden, I was just paralyzed. I just completely stopped. And I'm going to tell you that all the things that had happened to me—the jails, the hospital visits, the bad behaviors, and everything like that with my parents and everything like that—none of that scared me. But I think that losing my mind scared me. Now, I was out of all the options that I could possibly think of. All right, but I'd been in enough AA meetings now, and I just had a sponsor who was taking me through the second step. And so I said, well, okay, let's try this. And I closed my eyes, and I uttered something that was, I'm not really sure what it was, but it's somewhere in there. It said, God, please help me. I opened my eyes. I couldn't really see anything too different, but I could cut grass. So I made a lap. I said, well, maybe I didn't do this right. Let's try this again. And so I did it again. God, please help me. And what I can tell you is that when I opened my eyes the next time, I absolutely knew right then and there that there was a power greater than myself in this universe. The obsession to drink was immediately removed. It has not come back since then. I cut grass like awesome, by the way. I mean, I was floating all over that golf course that day. That also happened to have been a day of like a solar eclipse. I went out after I got off work. I played golf with some friends. I was like 200 par. It was awesome. I went back home. I got a yellow legal pad out. I started writing it down, this document called My Spiritual Experience. I mean, I'm writing this thing down hard, super hard, and I still have that document today. And then I called up my sponsor, and I told him, I said, I'm picking you up. We're going to the meeting. And we drive to the meeting. And I hand him this. I like, read this thing. And I mean, I was just, it was awesome. It was the most incredible thing. I mean, I can tell you that for the next several months, folks, I didn't make any decisions. My days were laid out for me. It was amazing. Absolutely amazing. And what that did, I'd been in so many AA meetings now, so I had taken in the knowledge, and now I got this power with me. It's just like the program of Alcoholics Anonymous just flowed into me. It was just incredible. So after that, the steps were just a breeze. I mean, I can tell you right now, I did not personally, I mean, my hand did it, but I did not write my four step. That just happened. Amends just happened. Everything just fell into place. It was absolutely 100% amazing to me. You know, and I'm really glad that I didn't leave before the miracle happened, because that was truly a miracle. That is, to me, the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous for me. You know, what it has given me is a relationship with something that I never believed in, ever. And again, you know, I told you I wanted to go to law school. I would have argued this in a court of law, okay? You know, and so what does sobriety look like today? I will tell you this. My sponsor that took me through the steps was awesome. There was also someone else who in my life that was extremely important to me and had a big impact on my sobriety. This lady actually taught me how to live sober one day at a time. Okay? And actually today is actually her AA celebration day. So I actually sent her a text message at like 1 o'clock in the morning, because we can do that now on New Year's Eve, right? We can do that. We can stay up till 1 o'clock in the morning and send a normal text. You know, congratulating her and thanking her. But yeah, she taught me how to live sober one day at a time, because I didn't know how to do that. But what she also did was she also introduced me to the service structure of Alcoholics Anonymous. So if you're like, wait a second, there's a structure, there's organization. Wait a second, it says that there's a tradition that says ought not ever be organized, okay? And it says what that means is that says AA as such, all right? And what that's talking about is that's talking about the recovery part. That ought not be organized. But how does this stuff right here happen? How do we have recordings? How do we have a website? How do we have literature? Okay, there is a structure to it. And she was what's called a DCM, and she introduced me to a side of AA that just clicked with me. She took me to my first convention. She took me to my first assemblies. And I just fell in love with it. I absolutely fell in love with it. My first year of Alcoholics Anonymous, I held three service positions. I overdo service work alcoholically as well. Okay. And one of them was at the district level, and I'm pretty sure that because when we finished working the steps, my sponsor said, okay, so where are you going to serve? I ended up at some district committee meeting. The next thing I know, I was the secretary of the corrections committee. And it has meant a world to me. I was going to assembly when I had no position. I had no actual formal position to take me to assembly. I'm currently, I've been a GSR. I currently rotate out as a DCM right now. Wait a second. Today's January the 1st. I am no longer a DCM. That is correct. I do serve at the area level. That is the state level now, as of today. I serve as a committee chair at the area level, communications. So I hope this is going well, my communication skills. If not, I got 4 years to figure out to get better at this. And I think it's really cool. I mean, I've been exposed to things in service that I absolutely do not believe that I would have been exposed to had I not been a part of that side of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm going to give you a quick little story about that. My first year as DCM, our district was going to host a picnic, okay? And so, you know, a couple hundred people, I think, 150, 200 people, we put on all the things. And, you know, everything doesn't work out the way it's supposed to work out. The PA system guy didn't show up, so I'm standing up on a column screaming, you know, yelling out to trying to control a crowd of alcoholics, okay, and get things organized. And there was a fellow there who's got a few decades of sobriety who we got to talking. He had ended up bringing a newcomer there, and we had ended up talking. We all exchanged numbers and things like that. And then there was we did a sobriety countdown, and there was a guy there that had 4 days of sobriety. All right, so we, of course, if you've never been a part of a sobriety countdown, stick around long enough to do that. It's really cool. All right, it's really cool. So, you know, the person with the longest amount of sobriety or the most amount of sobriety and the person with the least amount of sobriety got together and talked, and there was some literature that we gave them. Now, here's some really cool stuff. That person who had a few decades of sobriety had asked me a very simple question. He had said, "Hey, man, you know, maybe if there's anything I can ever help with, you know, maybe pass out cups or something like that, just let me know." I can tell you right now for a fact that he is doing a lot more than passing out cups. Be careful what you ask for, right? I can also tell you that that person that had 4 days of sobriety or 5 days of sobriety or whatever, he is now nearing a year and a half of sobriety. And I can tell you that that fellow that asked me about if he could pass out cups is now currently my sponsor. Okay? These are not things that happen if I don't do service work in Alcoholics Anonymous. This is an amazing, it's an amazing side of Alcoholics Anonymous to me. I want to talk a little bit about my home group. Okay? So what happened was where I got sober, after about 9 months, I'm ready to go out into the real world, right? I want to get another job and do all the things. And I did that. And I moved up to kind of where I live now in the northern Gwinnett area. And I was a member at a home group for about 4+ years. But things changed, and it wasn't fitting with me anymore. And so I started interviewing groups. And what that meant was I just went around to other groups and checked them out. And then I attended some of their group conferences and things like that. And there's this one group of folks who they initially were a meeting, and then they started it as a group, and I started attending their meeting, and I showed up there on my AA day, and one of the trusted servants of the group had said, "So Derek, what's your home group?" And I said, "Well, dang it, I guess it's this one," you know, and that's exactly how it works. And this is the really cool thing about this home group, okay? So at 6.5 years sober, I'm a newcomer. I'm easily a newcomer. When I first joined this group, I was a newcomer by over a decade. All right? I'm also one of 3 male home group members. Most of these are women. I am learning. I get to learn. I get to go in there and I get to learn. I get to see. I get to watch by example how this home group works. I also happen to be very fortunate in that I've got a former delegate in the home group. The current editor of Lavinia is in the home group. It's a very service-oriented home group. It's really cool. It's really cool. Something else I want to tell you about what life is like today, and I'm looking at my time, so try to wrap this up. Last time I spoke, I forgot this part. So there's a couple of nevers in my life, okay? Number one, I was never going to buy another home. I've done that, been there, done that. I'm good renting. Second thing I was never going to do was get married, okay? Been there, done that, all good. So on Founders Day this year, last year, Founders Day 2023, the clubhouse up there where I live was having an event, and my sponsor happened to be a part of that, and so I had asked him, could I have the mic for a little bit? And so I'm going to weave in some district service work and all the other kind of stuff, but I also weaved in a little bit of a proposal in front of a couple hundred people, 150 people. So I proposed on June the 10th of this year, and on July 26th we bought a home. On August 5th we got married in that home. And on August 26th, we moved into that home. So we're going to do that kind of alcoholically too, right? Now, she's in this room right now, and she spoke here a couple months ago. And again, this is really cool because in my home group, these are a lot of the women that she was around when she got sober. She's a lot more sober than me, not just in time as well. But that's really cool. And guess what? She comes with two kids. Another thing I got no experience with, right? I got no experience with this. So, you know, to become happily and usefully whole, I think about that again, you know. Am I a better person today than I was then? And the answer is yes, it is. It truly is. There's a few things I want to end on. I got this goofy hat, I got Converse sneakers on, all that kind of stuff. I like punk rock, okay? I liked punk rock before I got sober, and I like punk rock now that I'm sober, okay? What I didn't understand were some of the words, okay? You know? I thought they had a whole different meaning. So here's social distortion, ball and chain. Take away, take away, take away this ball and chain. I always thought that was talking about a relationship. That's what I always thought about it. You know, I made jokes and fun. But here's the next part. I'm lonely and I'm tired and I can't take any more pain. That's alcoholism. That group is one of us. Here's another one. Now, this song is called You'll Never Walk Alone. And Rodgers and Hammerstein did it in 1945. But the one I'm talking about was a cover in 2017 by the Dropkick Murphys, okay? And it's a song called You'll Never Walk Alone. Here's what it says. It says, when you walk through a storm, hold your head up high and don't be afraid of the dark. At the end of the storm, there's a golden sky and the sweet silver song of a lark. Walk on through the wind, walk on through the rain, though your dreams be tossed and blown. Walk on, walk on, with hope in your heart, and you'll never walk alone. And see, that's been my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous. What I found that was really cool is I don't have to do any of this stuff by myself. Something else that I got from another person, and I'll end with this. It says, if you get a second chance, grab it with both hands. If it changes your life, let it. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you all for letting me share my story.
Thank you so much, Derek. That was a great story.
First I slept, and then I crept to a hope-filled dream. You rescued me, and finally, waking there I look into love's window for a soul that's meant for me. Takes me where the promises are real. Sometimes quickly,
sometimes slow. We get just what we need. On a broad highway, stride for stride, we walk eternally. Look into love's window for a heart. Take me where